Samuel is the last of the judges, and Israelites want a king. They've been wanting a king, they're demanding a king. They're not happy with this judges thing. They kind of come and go. The judges were good when they had a loose organization of clans, with a judge who would talk with God and hear from God. That kind of focus as a, they work kind of as a judge, also as a military leader, also kind of as a prophet. They're like, no, we want to be like everybody else. We want a king like everyone else. There's peer pressure at the national level. They don't want a theocracy anymore. They want a monarchy, to be technical about it. God reluctantly agrees and finds the best candidate he can, and God then directs Samuel, who is the last of the judges, to a young guy named Saul. This is not the Saul that is Paul in the New Testament, okay? There's two in the Bible. This is Saul. And Saul, at the point that the story picks up for our E100 reading, Saul is out looking for lost donkeys. There is humor there. And he keeps missing them. He goes from town to town trying to find his family's donkeys. And he keeps showing up too late. It actually is kind of humorous, if you kind of think about it. Saul is not looking to be king, he is looking for donkeys. Literally, he is looking for his And Samuel spots him, invites him over to dinner, he stays the night at Samuel's house, and in the morning, he anoints Saul as king. Very private ceremony in his house, very low key. He says to Saul, a bunch of things are going to happen to you that are kind of miraculous. I'm going to tell you about them, and then when they happen to you, you'll know that God's in this, and then go home and do what you think is fit. And Saul returns home, because but in the meantime, somebody else found the lost donkeys. But Saul doesn't tell anybody what happened. Okay? Nobody else in the family knows what has happened. So I'm going to be picking up reading at 1 Samuel chapter 10, verse 17. Or verse 16. Saul said, the donkeys had been found. And Saul replied, said Saul. But Saul didn't tell his uncle that Samuel had anointed him to be king. Okay, so he's back home. Nobody knows, and this is what happens. Later, Samuel called all the people of Israel to meet before the Lord at Mizpah. And he gave them this message from the Lord, the God of Israel. I brought you from Egypt and rescued you from the Egyptians and from all the nations that were oppressing you. But though I have done so much for you, you have rejected me and said, we want a king instead. Now, therefore, present yourselves before the Lord by tribes and clans. So Samuel called the tribal leaders together before the Lord, and the tribe of Benjamin was chosen. And then he brought each family of the tribe of Benjamin before the Lord, and the family of the Matrites were chosen. And finally, Saul, the son of Kish, was chosen from among them. But when they looked for Saul, he had disappeared. So they asked the Lord, where is he? And the Lord replied, he is hiding among the baggage. So they found him and brought him out, and he stood head and shoulders above everyone else. And Samuel said to all the people, this is the man the Lord has chosen as your king. No one in all Israel is his equal. And all the people shouted, long live the king! Then Samuel told the people what the rights and duties of a king were. He wrote them down on a scroll and placed it before the Lord. And then Samuel sent the people home again. And Saul went home too. He went to Gibeah, and a band of men whose hearts God had touched became his constant companions. But there were some wicked men who complained, how can this man save us? And they despised him and refused to bring him gifts. But Saul ignored them. And this is the word of the Lord. It said all of the people of Israel were gathered together for an important occasion. They demanded that God set a king over them, and they are going to get one. They are full of excitement. Whose tribe will it be? Whose family? Will it be me? I mean, this hadn't happened before. Everybody could be a star. And then, in order to find out who was going to be king, I don't know if you picked this up, they drew lots. And for those of you who have recently seen The Hunger Games, that's how you get chosen. They drew lots for that too, but in that case that was a bad thing because you got chosen lots to die. But here you get to get your lot drawn to be king, but that's still an awful lot of pressure. A lot of pressure. I want to give you a little aside, those of you who like a little bit of kind of interesting facts here. There's a number of times in the Old Testament where they actually do kind of cast lots. The lots were known as the Urim and the Thummim, and they were these little things that were stored in the breastplate of the ephod of the high priest. They were just kind of kept there, these little lots. And they were brought out and cast whenever a simple yes or no was needed in this kind of case. And they would be cast for each candidate, which would then narrow down the options. It was not unlike throwing dice, honestly. And it seemed like a crazy way to choose a king. Except, because it was basically kind of random draw, you would think, except people truly believed in this society that God could be at work in various ways beyond human understanding. Surely then, God could be active in the casting of lots. So it's not random in the way that we think of random. It was allowing God to choose in a way that was not subjective. In other words, the people were not choosing. They believed that God, in the casting of those lots, was going to choose whom he was going to choose. So picture it. Here's Samuel, the prophet, the priest of God, and he's kind of throwing dice. And he's kind of like, I think, a little bump. Anyway, I'm not going to get into that. So they start out with the 12 tribes of Benjamin, the 12 tribes, and they throw, cast lots to find out which tribe. Yeah, is it this one? Yes or no. Is it this one? Yes or no. And they get down to Benjamin, who is the smallest of the tribes. And then in that tribe, they bring forth the clans one by one, and the Matri tribe is chosen. And then in that, it must have taken a long time. And then in that clan, then the families are brought. And then the family of Kish is chosen. And then again, from the family of Kish, then Saul is chosen. And then how embarrassing is that? Saul wants to present the first king to the people, but where is he? The Lord knows where Saul is, right? They pray to God, where is he? And Saul, and the Lord says, he is hidden among the baggage. Is that wonderful or what? Saul already knows, by the way, that he has been anointed as king. He already had a ceremony. So he knows he's going to be chosen. Isn't it interesting that he is curiously absent? Is he hiding? Yes, because God says so. He has hidden himself among the baggage. Is he trying to avoid the call that God has given him? Yeah, probably. It's such a metaphor. Doesn't it just beg us to unpack that a little bit? Have you ever hidden among the baggage? Yeah, what does that mean? Let's find that out. Have you ever hidden among the baggage? Some theologians say that Saul was qualified for this position of king. I am not so sure, because I started at 1 Samuel and I read up to here, and the only thing that I could find that really captures people's imagination that's really impressive is that he's tall. He stands head and shoulders above everybody. Okay. But he hasn't won any battles. He hasn't killed any lions with his bare hands, aka Samson. Perhaps Saul feels underqualified for the position. If being tall is the condition to be king, okay, he's good. But otherwise, he was out looking for donkeys. It's not like he was high on the pipeline. I mean, you gotta really think about this. And it begs the question, have you ever felt underqualified for something God has called you to do? I hope so, because if not, you have not been listening. We all feel underqualified for things that God calls us to do. That is a natural reaction. We have been reading through this Old Testament stuff. You start with Moses felt underqualified. Noah felt underqualified. Matter of fact, the people that feel qualified, God doesn't really want to use because they are probably megalomaniacs or narcissists. Feeling underqualified is kind of part of the job description. Saul is feeling underqualified. And so do we. But it's clear that God has chosen Saul. Matter of fact, twice now, God has chosen Saul. Saul doesn't seem to doubt that call. He's doubting his ability to answer the call. And that's different. But when we doubt our ability to answer the call, it is hard to hear. And we have to ask ourselves, you know, when God calls you, is his call louder than your fear? Happens to all of us. Probably happening to you right now. There's something going on in your life that God is calling you to do. It's kind of at the edges of your conscience. It's something that is bigger and broader. It is kinder. It is more loving. It is more merciful than you want to be. It requires more faith, more trust, more time, more energy than you want to give. It's probably God. And you feel underqualified. Welcome aboard. And this is probably the most important thing I'm going to say. This next line right here. So, and I did not know this when I first started out on the journey. But it is proven true time and time again as I read the stories of God, and it proves true time and time again in my own life. God equips whom he calls. Get it? God equips whom he calls. God does not go out looking around for the best speaker, the best teacher, the most qualified caregiver, the most loving person, the brightest bulb on the tree to get him, to invite him to serve him. That is not how it works. God makes a call. Hello? I would like you to work in making this world a better place. I would like you to share my love, my forgiveness, my trust, my mercy. Whatever that call was. I don't know what that call was, right? The person answers the call, hello? And then God equips. We think that we have to get all this training. We have to be ready. And I believe it. I'm an education snob. I am all about training. I am all about getting ready. I believe me. You know. But God is going to call you to do something you don't feel qualified to do. And when you say yes, then God will show you how to get ready or how to be ready. Or God will just plunge you into it, and then you will find in the doing of it that you were more ready than you thought because you rely on God. God is suspicious of people who are overqualified because they will do it in their own strength. When I started this work way back, I could have gone into this ministry thing as a performance artist. I could perform, I could sing and dance, and occasionally you do get to see that, but it has then been a challenge to make sure that I allow God to work for me and don't work through me and not just rely on my little kind of song and dance to entertain you. I'm not really here to entertain you. I mean, if I happen to be entertaining, wow, that's great. But my training was an entertainment. That can be a real liability. Do you see the difference? I mean, God equips whom he calls. Say yes, and God will get you ready. At least as ready as he wants you to be. We're never ready enough. Right? We're never ready enough in our lives. I mean, when my parents got married, my mother told me once when I was an adult, she says, I said, Mom, how long were you guys married before I was born? And she said, Pam, if I had waited till your father was ready, you would never have been. You would never have come. I don't advocate that as a marriage strategy, but I mean, we are never ready. We are never ready. Saul is not feeling ready. but God has called. And now that God has called Saul, guess what? God changes Saul. I didn't read this part, but in chapter 10, verse 6, after this little private ceremony where he is anointed, it says, at that time, the Spirit of the Lord will come upon you with power, and you will prophesy, and you will be changed into a different person. You will be changed into a different person. That's what it says. And when he returned home that day, people noticed that he was different. And he didn't share that he had been anointed, but even people noticed that he was different. When we move out, when we say yes, we are changed. And I hope that you can think about in your life those times when you have been changed through your encounters with God. Have you been changed? When you said yes to do something, or yes to be something, or yes to act in a particular way. And a lot of times we can't tell the difference that we've changed, but other people can tell. And let me remind you what we said together there at the beginning at 1 Peter 2. You, hello, are a chosen people, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a people belonging to God, that you may declare the praises of him who called you out of darkness and into his wonderful light. That's who you are. That's who I am. Do you know that that's who you are? Or are you hiding among the baggage? The Hebrew word translated baggage here means a number of things. Most often, it refers to supplies, especially military supplies. I thought it was really delightful that we crowned king on our little, with flowers and food and companionship. Because it's most likely that the baggage here in this story are axes, spears, hoes, and other kinds of military supplies. This king's stuff is serious business. You see, Saul is expected to lead the Israelites into battle and to protect them. That word translated baggage can also mean anything we carry around with us or things that we possess. Now, the Morse family is very familiar with baggage. Ever watch us go to the airport? I mean, it is baggage. I tell you, I get to the airport and we've lugged so much gear and I'm saying, why not swimming? When Ben travels for skiing, he has so much luggage, he can't. You know how they say, like, don't leave a bag unattended? He has to leave a bag unattended. He can't carry it all at once. He's got two ski bags and the backpack and the other bag. I mean, that is a lot to move. When we go skiing, when the kids go to their camp, they travel pretty heavy as baggage goes. When we went on our trip to Alaska, we learned we traveled pretty light. We didn't need the flashlights, but other than that, we did pretty good. But what about baggage as a metaphor? Things that you haul around, things that you carry around, things that you hide behind. What baggage was getting in the way of Saul answering God's call? And what baggage gets in our way? Are you hiding among the baggage? It is such a beautiful picture. Take that with you. It's so modern. Hiding among the baggage. A lot of things are happening for Saul. And unless you read a little bit more of his story, you're not necessarily going to see that in the short part that I read. But some of the things that Saul is hiding among, if you will. I mean, definitely fear. Definitely fear. He's also hiding among what concern about what other people will say about him. He's also hiding behind an inconsistency. He's sort of committed, he's sort of not committed, and then later on he kind of gets overcommitted. There's a lack of trust that you see in Saul and an impatience about him. And God is clear. He says, I got the best guy I could. I mean, it wasn't that God didn't give him a good candidate, but he is flawed. He is flawed. I wonder if he's among the baggage counting spears. I don't know what he's doing in the baggage. But what gets in your way? What is the baggage your way? What is the baggage you hide amongst? Do you trip over your baggage? I got some baggage I'm working on right now. Realizing getting closer to 50, having a little existential crisis here, I'll admit it. A lot of you have already done that. Be patient with me. You know, my body's not living up to my expectations. You know, things are falling apart. I know, just wait. Earl had a great word for me this morning. He reminded me, he said, Pam, you will find what you are looking for. Which reminds me, it's the battle of the mind, isn't it? But what are some of the things that you are tripping over? And really, what are they God things? And going back to that picture with the kids, what is it stuff that you're insisting on carrying around that really is for God to carry? And that image of my yoke is easy, my burden is light, Jesus' yoke is Jesus' teaching. And as we receive his word into our lives, that allows us to let go. But you've got to receive it. And I love that picture of the feather. My burdens are light as a feather because Jesus carries them for me. But when we carry them, they weigh a ton. What is the baggage? Is it lack of trust? Is it negativism? Is it religiosity? Is it fear? Is it pride? I don't know. You know. But dare. Dare to come out from behind the baggage. And dare to get in the game. I just have this little thing I found from Teddy Roosevelt that I do want to share with you. And it was something he spoke on April 23rd, 1910. It's over 100 years ago. And at the Sorbonne in Paris. And for some reason, it just captivates me and it inspires me, you know, I got to get over. Got to get it beyond the baggage. See if it hits you. I love this. Theodore Roosevelt, the 26th President of the United States and winner of the 1906 Nobel Peace Prize, which I had forgotten. He said this, "It is not the critic who counts, nor the one who points out how the strong person stumbled, or where the doer of the deed could have done better. The credit belongs to the person who is actually in the arena, whose face is marred by dust and sweat and blood, who strives valiantly, who errs and comes short again and again, because there is no effort without error and shortcoming, who does actively strive to do deeds, who knows the great enthusiasms, the great devotion, who spends oneself on a worthy cause, who at the best knows in the end the triumph of high achievement, and who at the worst, if he or she fails, at least fails while daring greatly. Far better it is to dare mighty things, to win glorious triumphs, even though checkered by failure, than to rank with those timid spirits who neither enjoy nor suffer much because they live in the gray twilight that knows neither victory nor defeat." You're hiding behind the baggage. Let's spend a minute in prayer. And then just let God speak to you in this moment. I've put out a bunch of words. But the words that will stay with you are the words that God allows to rest in your heart. Lord God, the word that is for us today May it find a home in our hearts that will set us free. And then we'll cause our burdens to be lighter. Not just so that we can live happy lives, but that we may live abundant lives and live in your world. And live in the kingdom of God. May it be then that this place will be a better place. There will be more hope and love and peace and joy because we have traveled here. May we dare to be. Lord God, we've brought a lot to prayer today. And we know that you're the ultimate answers to these prayers. As a matter of fact, we raised concerns. We're not even always sure what the prayer is. But in all of these prayers, I guess it would be safe to say, Lord, more of you. More of you. More of your healing. More of your power. More of your presence. We lift up to you Karen Brower, and Bill, and Jerry's dad, Jean, Uncle Ralph, John, Rick, Susan, we give you thanks for the healing in Robin's life and Karen's. We give you thanks for Sam and Skip. And pray that daily they will find your way and walk in it. We give you thanks for our families, for our communities, for the country in which we live, for your world. May your kingdom come. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, and the power, and the glory. As we finish our time together, before we get to go and